Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause a motherfucker 6'4". Hey Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up and away we go. Mic check and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Hello everybody, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Joe Prano Podcast. I am your host, Joe Prano, coming to you from a Courtyard by Marriott here in Hoover, Alabama. I am down here in Hoover, Alabama, performing at the Stardome, a fantastic club just outside of Birmingham, Alabama. Somebody yelled out Roll Tide numerous times during the show last night. And I'm on a bit of quarantine. I'm on a bit of self-quarantine, because as we all know, the coronavirus, COVID-19, is going around. So I've been staying in my room, and I figured what a better time to bring back the podcast than right now, when I'm sitting in a hotel room in Alabama with absolutely nothing to do. I just checked the Joe Prano Podcast page on the Apple Podcasts app, and I saw that it has been over 1 year since I posted an episode of the show. The last episode I put out was February 22nd, 2019, and it was after Brody Stevens passed away. Did a quick story about the first time I ever did stand-up comedy and how Brody Stevens hosted that show. And it's wild that it's been over a year since I posted an episode of the JPP. I, as many of you know, have had a pretty crazy year. It's been pretty nuts since around that time last year. A lot has happened. A lot of things in my personal life have been crazy. In my professional life, right around that time last year was when I first auditioned for the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. I then had a call back in April after doing well, and then did the festival in July. And doing Just for Laughs definitely was a big, I don't know, I don't want to say change, but a fork in the road in my comedy career. So a lot's been happening since then. Been just, you know, super busy, working more on the road, working more on personal projects, and of course still doing the Dirty Sports Podcast with my good friend Andy Ruther. But I thought it was time to get back to this podcast, and I've had this idea for this episode for about a month now, and it's even more fitting that I'm going to do it today, now that the coronavirus has hit and locked us all in our homes, locked us all on quarantine with nothing to do, with no sports. And honestly, if you're listening to this, let me just say, stay in. Because, number one, because why not? I mean, if you have a job that absolutely requires you to go out, or, you know, you need money from your job, a job that you can't do at home, like, I don't want to be in Hoover, Alabama right now, but I am. I don't feel like it's super safe to fly, but it was too late to cancel the gig. The shit didn't really hit the fan until I was already down here. And I'm going to finish out my weekend. And I may or may not be in Fantasy Springs Resort and Casino next weekend in Palm Desert in Indio to do more shows. Because I need the money. Because I'd be screwing over some people by canceling. But I don't feel great about it. I don't feel great going out and doing shows. I'm doing the best job I can here. And I think I'm being funny. But I don't feel awesome about being in a room of a couple hundred people. We don't know a ton about what's going on with this virus, but we do know what's happened in Italy, and we do know what's happened in, you know, China, and we do know what's happened in South Korea. And everything I've read says that basically better safe than sorry. Why go out if you don't need to? And honestly, that's my advice for you guys. Like, I get it, St. Patrick's Day is coming up. No one loves going out and day drinking more than the guy you're listening to right now. But like, take a year off. It's like you don't have to do it. And honestly, you don't have to go out to the gym right now. There's plenty of workouts you can do at home. You don't have to go to restaurants. I've seen a lot of great things about buying gift certificates from restaurants to support your favorite restaurant and using them later and all that stuff. And there's a million different things. Read all the tweets. You're inside. Stay inside. Read the tweets. Read the Instagrams. Read the Facebook posts. Million great pieces of advice out there. Million great articles about why this is a good idea to avoid going out in public. But the reason, and anybody who's listened to this show knows this about me, I'm not a big fan of solo podcasts. I feel really weird when I listen to other people do it. I feel really weird right now that I'm just in a hotel room talking into my phone. But I have had this idea for a while, even prior to the quarantine, because I have actually basically been on quarantine myself since my knee injury in Tahoe in early January. I broke my fibula and shattered my knee. I broke my tibial plateau. For you guys who are not dirty sports fans or have not been keeping up with my social media at Joe Prano on Instagram, I have a pretty bad knee injury. I had surgery, and I've basically been bedridden for sure, basically right after it happened, up till my surgery. For a couple weeks after my surgery, I'm just now a little bit more on the mend, and moving around on crutches and being able to put a little weight on it. But I had an idea for an episode that I wanted to share with you guys, and now it just fits so much better. The idea that I had was I have been just keeping track of what I've been calling my knee injury entertainment. All of these things that I've been ingesting since I've been bedridden, all of the things that I've watched, that I've listened to, that I've read, and some of them are fantastic, some of them are just okay, some of them are pretty bad. But now, with everybody being on lockdown, everybody essentially having to be on a very similar type of house arrest as I have been with my knee, I figured all the more reason to share with you guys some of my thoughts and feelings on these things, and give you some things to watch, to download, to listen to read, order stuff on Amazon. You can order these books. I'm sure they'll be there in a day. You can, if you have a Kindle, do that whole thing. Everything is streaming now. So this is all great stuff that you can digest, ingest, watch, listen to, while you're home, while you're quarantined. First things first, I just did this a couple hours ago. My comedy special, Joe Prano Takes the Stand, recorded at The Stand in New York City, a 44-minute comedy special, including a short film starring my good friend Pete Sestaro and I, up front, is available on Vimeo On Demand, and I have just set a promo code so that if you are home and you are quarantined, you can get it forever. You can buy it for one American dollar. So if you search Joe Prano Takes a Stand and go to the Vimeo On Demand site and you put in promo code Corona for the buy option, it will take $7.99 off the price of the $8.99 total, and you will get my comedy special and the short film that goes with it for $1 forever. You'll have it forever for one American dollar. So if you need a comedy special and you've never watched Joe Prano Takes the Stand, go do that. That's the first thing that you can do. And also, if you rented it before and watched it once, you probably paid $4.20 for it when it was available for rent. Well, now you can get it for $1. So buy it and keep it forever. The other thing that I am featured on is a compilation audio album called Valentine's Day is for Suckers. That's available on Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, SiriusXM. Wherever you stream your music from, Punchin' Valentine's Day is for Suckers. It's an 11-track compilation album all about relationships and love and Valentine's Day. And it features 10 comedians, and there's 11 tracks. Why is there 11 tracks and only 10 comedians? Because ya boy has two tracks. I have two of the 11 tracks, and I think they're both pretty good. So, and by the way, those jokes are different than any of the things that you'll hear on Joe Prano Takes a Stand. So if you have watched Joe Prano Takes a Stand, if you do own Joe Prano Takes the Stand, but you need new Joe Prano content, go to Valentine's Day is for Suckers, wherever you stream music from, and listen to that. Now, on to some content that I have not personally produced. I got a list of suggestions from people when I got hurt. I put on Twitter that I was needing things to watch and to listen to and to read. And I got a ton of responses. And I took some of your guys' suggestions and I watched them and listened to them and read them. And we'll just start in the order that I have them written down on this note, this iPhone note on my phone. The very first thing I did watch is I streamed, somebody suggested Brockmeyer, knowing that I'm a sports fan, knowing that I'm a big baseball fan. Brockmeyer is on IFC. It also streams on Hulu. It is a half-hour comedy show starring Hank Azaria as Brockmeyer, who is a disgraced baseball announcer, a sort of debaucherous Vin Scully type of baseball guy. And he does his broadcasts alone, and he has a meltdown on air, disappears, and then returns to work for a shitty minor league baseball team owned by Amanda Peet. This is the first thing I streamed during my recovery, and I streamed all of season one in a day. And then I started season two, and I watched a couple episodes, and then I hit pause on it, and I was like, look, I'm going to be here for a while. I'm not going to do this whole series in a sitting. I'm going to mix in some other things, but I always have Brockmeyer to come back to. So I did the first season plus of Brockmeyer, the first season and maybe two or three episodes, and I loved it. It's funny. It's smart. If you're a baseball fan, there's a lot of shots, you know, sort of veiled shots at the way baseball promotes itself and everything that, you know, Major League Baseball does. And it's just funny. And Hank Azaria as Brockmeyer is fantastic. There's a couple of awesome cameos from other baseball guys. I believe it's the end of season one. Joe Buck and a bunch of guys make a cameo. And I highly recommend it. If you're a comedy fan and a baseball fan, it's just right for you. And like I said, it's a half hour. It's short, digestible episodes. I streamed all of season one in a sitting, all of season one and the first couple in like a day, in like a day and a half, like right when I got home from the hospital. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward, as I have sort of run through much of my list, I'm looking forward to going back and starting where I left off and picking up with Brockmeyer. So give Brockmeyer a watch. The Outsider on HBO started airing right around probably when my knee injury happened, maybe a little bit before. And it just wrapped up its series slash season. They haven't really hinted at whether or not the end of this season was the series finale or not. I guess they're going to see how much you know, hunger there is for more. It was supposed to be the series finale, but they sort of left it open-ended that it could return. I didn't love The Outsider. I actually really, really enjoyed the start of The Outsider because I thought it was going to be sort of a true crime, murder mystery type of thing. Jason Bateman is one of the executive producers and one of the stars, and he's accused of murdering a kid in his hometown, and all the DNA evidence points to him, but he swears he didn't do it. And that's kind of the gist of episode one. But it goes into, it's based on a short story by Stephen King. So it is like a horror fiction tale. And I didn't know that going in. I just trusted HBO. I trusted the cast. I trusted basically everybody involved and was like, I just believe this is going to be good based on everybody that is involved in making it. And I feel like it went off the rails a little bit. I think it didn't, as much as like the Stephen King horrorness, thriller, like, I don't want to say sci-fi, I don't know the term I'm looking for, but this sort of fantasy, you know, fantasy horror fiction thing. I was in, I was liking it, but I just felt like it didn't wrap up super strong. And I watched every episode, I watched the whole season, and I recommend it if you like that kind of thing, for sure. Like if you're a Stephen King guy or gal, for sure watch it. I went into it, again, like I said, on the murder mystery tip, and I was fine when it twisted away from that, but I wasn't super stoked with how it wrapped up. It was a little bit of a letdown for me. So that is HBO's The Outsider. The next one somebody suggested to me, I should have written down everybody's names who made these suggestions, because those of you who made great suggestions, I would love to give shout-outs to, but oh well, I'm in a hotel room in Hoover, Alabama, and can't find that right now. The next one that somebody recommended to me on Twitter when I put out my tweet calling for content was The Boys on Amazon Prime, and I fucking loved The Boys. I got that from numerous people as a suggestion. I looked up what it was about. It was sort of billed as a superhero thing, and I am a bit tired of the superhero genre at this point. I am a guy with a Batman tattoo, so it's not like I'm anti-superheroes. And we talked about this when I did my episode, again, just over a year ago, with the duo who run the comic book store in the Valley. I am, and if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it. The comic book genre to me is just, it's so beaten to death at this point that even me, a comic book guy, is kind of over it. That being said, of course, I went and saw The Joker and loved it. And I'm like, you know, is that really a comic book movie? I don't know. But I watched The Boys because so many of you suggested it. And I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it turns the comic book hero, the superhero genre on its side, because it's basically about, you know, sort of a Justice League type of conglomerate of superheroes that are all over the earth, and they, you know, they fight crime and blah, blah, blah. But what we see is that there's a dark underside to these superheroes. And it's almost like, you know, they're being used as in a bit of a military industrial complex way. And Elizabeth Shue sort of runs the superhero organization. And honestly, I don't even want to talk too much about it because I didn't know anything about it going in. I didn't know anything about it, and that made it so much better, that the way it unfolded, I didn't know what to expect, and I absolutely loved it. It's dirty, it's funny, it's dark, it's fantastic. Honestly, of all the things I streamed in terms of TV shows and binge-worthy content, I would say that The Boys is number one on the list. So shout out to everybody who replied to my tweet and said to watch The Boys on Amazon. The next one, which is, again, an HBO show, an HBO comedy. People who know me know that I don't watch a ton of comedy. I don't really seek out comedy. But again, I trust HBO. The few things that I do like in comedy or love in comedy tend to be on HBO. I love Silicon Valley, which just ended this past season. I love Barry. If you go back through, you know, a bunch of the HBO comedy content, I tend to enjoy it. So I like to give them an opportunity. I like to give HBO an opportunity for an episode or two, like basically on everything. You know, I'll watch just about anything that HBO does. And sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. I'm out on Westworld. I know season 3 is about to start. I gave it a season. I started watching season 2. It fucking stunk. Season 2 was a disaster, and I'm out. But I'll give you most of, if not all of, a season of something, and it's on you to hook me from there. And the next one, the comedy on HBO that I have been watching the entire first season of, I think it's wrapping up soon, is Avenue 5. Avenue 5 is, it's become especially hilarious in these last few weeks because it is basically a sci-fi comedy where a space cruise ship is stuck out in space. And it's become especially funny because of all the cruise ships that are now stuck out in the ocean or stuck now offshore with the coronavirus thing. I don't know if this is a massive viral marketing campaign to get people interested in Avenue 5, but it is kind of hilarious that that there's an HBO show essentially about a cruise ship stuck at sea in space, and now there's a bunch of cruise ships stuck at sea because you know, of quarantine issues. I started watching Avenue 5, and I didn't love it out of the gate. It's grown on me a lot. I think it's gotten better, but it's one of those shows where, and HBO does this from time to time, where the first couple episodes really seem like they're just setting up the characters for you, and so it's tough to get into because you're like, is anything going to happen besides me meeting these people? And then when you do get into it and you do meet these people, it's still, I mean, 3, 4, 5 episodes in, wasn't really grabbing me. It's gotten a lot better toward the end of the season. I'm starting to laugh out loud a little bit more. But I will be interested to see if, first of all, if it gets a season 2. And if it does get a season 2, when that season 2 comes out, if I am like itching to watch it. Because right now I'm watching every episode as they come out, but I'm also stuck in bed, you know, with a knee injury and now with a self-imposed quarantine. And I'm on the fence as to whether or not I actually like it or if I just fucking need things to do and need things to watch. Like I said, it's getting better, it's getting funnier, but it's still not on the level or even close to it of a Silicon Valley, of a Barry, of a lot of the other HBO comedies. And honestly, Silicon Valley, the first season wasn't super strong until the end of the first season. And if you haven't watched Silicon Valley, definitely watch it and get at least through the season finale of season 1. That is where Silicon Valley really grabbed on to its comedy, grabbed on to its humor, and from there it took off. But I'm glad I gave it the whole first season because had I not watched that last episode of the first season of Silicon Valley, I'm not sure I would have, you know, wanted to keep going. So I'm hoping that Avenue 5 does the same thing, but right now I'm on the fence. But maybe they're going to find the same sort of magic that they wrap up season 1 with, and it's going to take off from there. I have been watching a ton of Shark Tank. Anybody who knows anything about me knows that I love Shark Tank. And the one thing I love about Shark Tank, the joke that I always make is when I have access to my streaming at home, which I don't have cable, I stream everything. I never watch Shark Tank. And anytime I'm anywhere with cable, like anytime I visit my sister in New York or anytime I'm at a hotel for a weekend of comedy shows, I digest just marathons of Shark Tank. And now needing stuff to watch while I'm home, I've gone to actually seeking out Shark Tank on streaming. I now like have new episodes docking in my library on YouTube TV, and I just love Shark Tank. If you haven't watched Shark Tank is just like my guiltiest pleasure, and I don't even really feel guilty about it. I'm a master at knowing if somebody's going to get a deal and what kind of deal they're going to get offered. And I love it. I've watched hundreds of episodes of Shark Tank, and I look forward to watching hundreds of more. Speaking of guilty pleasures, my girlfriend has gotten me into The Bachelor the last two seasons. She is a big Bachelor fan. And so I have been watching, I watched last season of, sorry, The Bachelorette with Hannah Brown, and I watched this season of The Bachelor with Pilot Pete, and it was definitely a guilty pleasure for a while. I had never watched The Bachelor before. I think I'd watched a marathon literally 15 years ago when it first came out, when I was like stuck in a ski house in Vermont, and it was like the only channel that came in was like ABC Family or something like that. And so the only thing we got all weekend was a Bachelor marathon, I think of season one or season two. So that was my only experience with it before. And I gotta say, it was a little fun watching it with my girlfriend these past two seasons of one The Bachelor and one The Bachelorette. But both seasons ended in such debauchlish fashion. That's not a word, but it's gonna be a word in describing The Bachelor and The Bachelorette from here on out. I hated Hannah Brown from day one, and everybody's like, "We love Hannah Brown." I was like, "Hannah Brown sucks," and I was right because she ended up picking the worst dude. And then I hated Pilot Pete. Like, I liked Pilot Pete on Hannah Brown season, but then in Pilot Pete season, he was just a disaster, and he really like picked some horrible women, and it was just a nightmare. And what I'm starting to realize is, as much fun as I had watching it with my girlfriend and the guilty pleasureness of like spending Monday nights watching this dumbass show and me making fun of it while she watches it really seriously, is that I really feel like I wasted my time with terrible, terrible people that I never want to see again. Pilot Pete is a fucking dork. Pilot Pete is a guy who spent his whole life watching The Bachelor and talks only in bachelor terms. A fucking reality show is not a journey. Stop calling this shit a journey. Stop talking about your truth. Stop talking about clarity. Stop talking about fucking, it's like you're like, "I just want to be honest. I just need clarity. I'm just trying to do what's right for me." Shut the fuck up. Find a woman that you like, have sex with her, marry her. It's not that difficult. I know that's crazy coming from like a 40-year-old unmarried dude, but like you go on these shows and then like everybody acts like it's a real fucking thing. This isn't a real fucking thing, Madison. You went on a reality show. You know you're gonna fuck this dude at the end. That's what fantasy suites are. And then you arrive and you don't want to have sex with him. You're weird, okay? You're weird for signing up and not knowing that. I'm not actually surprised now that I'm here in Alabama that this is where you're from, because you watched every season of this show where all the people do is eventually have sex at the end, and then you were surprised that this guy's gonna have sex with people at the end. And Pilot Pete, you're a dork. You're like, he basically thought that he deserved a fiance out of this. So then when he got dumped by one girl, he just proposed to another girl. That's rude as shit, dude. Oh man, I have basically realized that the people, you know, I treated them like they were regular people at first, and then I realized that they're not regular people. They're fans of the show. This is basically fan fiction. It's people who spend their lives heavily invested in The Bachelor, then getting to be on The Bachelor. And so they only act how everybody acts in this fantasy world that's built around The Bachelor. This ain't real life. Okay? Stop talking like this. Stop saying journey. Stop saying clarity. It's embarrassing. And I'm no longer gonna watch it. For a while, I was really into it. I talked about it on Dirty Sports, like, oh, we should get Andy Ruther on The Bachelor. I know there's an older chick coming up that's going to be the Bachelorette. I think she's 38, so people are hoping that there's like a more mature approach to this, but I will not be watching it. I will not be fucking watching it because I gave it one season of The Bachelorette. I gave it one season of The Bachelor. I thought Hannah Brown was a trash bag from the beginning. I was right. And then I was like, nah, well, I guess I'll do one of The Bachelor because Pilot Pete seems like a good dude. Pilot Pete is a fucking dork who lives in a fantasy land where saying things like, I'm just following my truth and I just got to be honest with my heart is a thing that people say. Like that I'm just trying to do the right thing. I'm just trying to, you know, find the right path on this journey. Dude, you're not walking hundreds of miles through the desert. This ain't a journey. You're in a fucking mansion in Calabasas, picking which dumb 22-year-old you want to spend the rest of your life with, and then breaking up with her 2 days after you do. So, yeah, I'm out on The Bachelor, and both Pilot Pete and Hannah Brown, I hope they get together and make terrible, terrible, terrible babies, and I hope that their babies get coronavirus. And I don't even feel bad about saying that. Speaking of trash romance TV shows, I did binge Love is Blind on Netflix, and I gotta say, between The Bachelor and Love is Blind, I'm Love is Blind all the way. This was actually at least a fun experiment. This is a show where people pick somebody that they potentially want to marry without seeing them. They talk to them in some sort of audio-only pods, and then they get out and they meet each other after they've proposed to one another and gotten engaged, and then, you know, start their engagement from there. And then the whole season ends with a number of these couples either getting married or somebody walking away at the altar, which, by the way, I thought was weird. Like, if these people don't want to get married, you should have let them fucking say that beforehand. Part of the deal shouldn't have been that these people have to do their walking away at the altar, because that shit was weird as fuck. But I actually really, really liked the like idea of this show, and even though most of the people on it were creepy as shit and weird as shit, and, you know, in Jessica's case, terrible as shit, it's kind of fun, and I kind of hope it continues. And unlike The Bachelor, I will continue with it, because even more so than The Bachelor, like, if you are somebody that watched this show and you want to be involved, you're a crazy person. And I am here for it. I am here for you wanting to be on the show, because it's so clearly not reality. You go into a room, you talk to somebody, you get engaged without meeting them. That's ludicrous. And if you want to participate in it, you're a lunatic, and I'm here for it. Unlike The Bachelor, where these people come into this situation and act like they're actually there to find love. It's like, yo, you are not here to find love. You are here to sell your Instagram account. You are here to be a terrible person. You are here because you're a super fan of The Bachelor, and you're psychotically weird because you think this is real life, and it is not real life. Back to HBO. I'm a couple episodes into McMillions, which is a documentary on the McDonald's monopoly scandal, and I just love the FBI agent who is the centerpiece of that. If you like docu-series, you like documentaries, you like true crime-ish stuff, definitely watch McMillions. I am, I think, 5 episodes in. I don't know where it ends. I've got to get back to it when I get home and get access to HBO again. But I just love the one FBI guy who sort of starts the whole thing and is the most interviewed and most vocal person in the docu-series. I want to be friends with him. I want to do ride-alongs with him. He's so much fun. And if you remember, you know, chasing Boardwalk and Park Place in the Monopoly game and wondering how you never, ever knew anybody that got it, it's because the whole thing was a scam, and it's pretty fun. So watch that. So that's the stuff on of TV that I have streamed. We're going to move on now. Well, let's just do an order, like I said, of the stuff I have written down here. Three movies. I watched Parasite after it won. Actually, before it won all the awards, but after it was nominated for all the awards. And I got to say, Parasite was a really, really, really good movie. It's also overrated. Parasite is the Russell Wilson of movies. Like, I am all about saying Parasite's dope, Parasite's really good, I really enjoy Parasite, but at the same time, the expectations, the hype around it, so high that I actually did think it was a bit disappointing. Like, it's really good, but it's not as good as the world would have you believe. If you don't know about Parasite, it's a Korean film where a family of poor folk end up working for a rich family, and it's hard to go into depth about what happens without spoiling anything. So I don't want to spoil it for you because it's worth watching, but just know going in, it's like a solid eight and a half out of 10, but it is not the greatest thing that has ever happened in film history, like the critics and awards folks would have you believe. I enjoyed it, but for me, a great film, like the films to me that are my favorites of all time and that I hold in the highest regard are ones that I think about long after I watch them. Like when I leave a theater, if I'm thinking about this movie for a week, I'm like, okay, this movie is legit. And I thought about Parasite for an hour after I watched it, for parts of a day after I watched it, but it is not a movie that has stuck with me. It's well shot, it's well acted, it's well written. It's a fantastic fucking movie, but it ain't all that. So take that for what it's worth. But either way, watch it. In fact, all three of the movies that I have on my list, and I've watched a bunch of other movies, and I think that these are the only ones that maybe made it on the list because they were the only ones that I thought, like, you got to tell people about these. I then did back-to-back sort of memoirish, autobiographical, young Hollywood look at their childhood. I did Honey Boy, which is Shia LaBeouf's sort of fictionalized look back at his life growing up as a young actor. He plays his father in the movie, and a child actor obviously plays a young version of Shia. And Shia's performance as his dad, really great. I really liked the movie. I thought he was great. I thought the kid was great. I thought the movie overall was really, really good. And what I liked about the movie a lot is, like, there's not enough of these movies that get made anymore because, again, everything's on the superhero tip. So you don't get the promotion machine for these character pieces. They did a decent job with Honey Boy, and then it was out on Amazon. It's on Amazon Prime for free now, which is where I eventually saw it. And I'd been wanting to see it since it was in theaters, but finally watched it, and I just liked it a lot. And Shia has sort of gotten this reputation of being a total fucking lunatic the last couple years. And when you watch a lot of the stuff that he's done, when you see a lot of the news reports, it's hard not to think that he is a lunatic. But it made me start, like, watching a bunch of other Shia LaBeouf interviews because I just thought it was good enough that, like, you can't write this movie and act as your dad in this movie in such a convincing way if you're so off your fucking rocker. So I started watching a bunch of other Shia LaBeouf interviews. I watched him on Hot Ones. I watched him on, like, a couple of other sit-down interviews from the past couple years. And I gotta say, I think Shia LaBeouf's a good dude. I think he's pretty misunderstood. And I think He's clearly, if you watch this movie, got a fucked up childhood. He clearly is dealing with some emotional baggage that was hung on him by his parents, if you watch this movie, by being a young actor. And I gotta say, I feel bad for thinking like, oh, you know, kind of a little Hollywood piece of shit who, you know, is just one of those celebutard nightmares, drunk driving, fighting, you know, the press. When you watch this movie, it makes you want to know more about him. And I did my homework, and now I like Shia. I think he's definitely crazy a little bit. I think he's definitely weird. I think he's definitely got like a ton of fucking dark shit going on in there. But at the same time, I really like the guy. I feel like we would be friends. I saw an interview with him where he's like friends with Kanye, and that totally makes sense. And I'm gonna put it out there. I'd like to hang out with Shia LaBeouf and Kanye sometime. And honestly, I'd rather hang out with Shia than Kanye, but I'm down to hang out with both. The other one, I don't want to say a very similar feel, but very similar idea, was mid-90s. That is the Jonah Hill directed semi-autobiographical look at his life growing up in the mid-90s in L.A., being like a little skate rat and hanging out with this crew of skaters. I don't know how much this is based on his life, or I should say, I don't know if it's as much based on his life as Honey Boy is on Chaya's, but there's definitely, if you read about Jonah Hill, and tons of elements of the fact that he grew up, he loved hip hop, he loved skating. And this seems to be a little bit of an ode to that era in his life. And another one, I fucking really liked it. And it's funny because the kid who plays his older brother, I wish I hadn't shut off my internet so I could look up all these names, but the kid who plays his older brother in mid-90s also plays older Shia LaBeouf in Honey Boy. So there's a crossover there. Yeah, L.A., 90s. Early 90s hip hop, skateboarding, just a great movie. I really enjoyed it. It's shot on God knows what, some sort of antiquated 90s film stock, you know, and it's just got that feel. It feels like there are moments in it that feel like a shitty skateboarding film from the mid 90s. And I believe this is Jonah Hill's directorial debut, and I thought it was great. I watched it late one night. I was getting ready to go to bed, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll start it and finish it, you know, another day, and I ended up watching the whole thing. So those are my three sort of movie, they're not really reviews, just kind of tips. Parasite, Honey Boy, mid-90s, liked all of them, you know, tame your hype going into Parasite and enjoy the other two. I have recently finished two books. I've got a bunch of other books that I'm working on. I'm not usually one to do this where I'm reading multiple things simultaneously, but I have had so much time in my hands that I am currently like reading like four books at a time and just going back and forth between whatever is sort of jumping out to me at any given moment. I'm reading Kingdom of Fear, which is the book about Hunter Thompson that came out recently. I've obviously read every stitch of word that Hunter Thompson himself has ever written. So now I'm on to the reading about Hunter Thompson books. I just started getting into Vonnegut. I know that sounds crazy. Everybody that I admire is a Kurt Vonnegut fan, and I've just never done it. So I've started two of his, and I just started City of Thieves, which my buddy Doug Ray, who wrote the intro and outro music for this podcast and for the Kooks of Comedy and for many, many other great, and was a guest on this podcast. He sent me that on Amazon, and he also sent me Ham on Rye, the Bukowski book, which is the only Bukowski novel that I haven't read. So I've got all those lined up. But the ones that I finished recently, The Alchemist, which my girlfriend recommended, and she said it was her favorite book of all time. And I loved The Alchemist. I thought it was great. It's spiritual, almost religious. It's short. It's inspiring. It is the story, God, I don't even know how to describe it. The Alchemist is the story of this shepherd in, I wouldn't even know how to describe the time frame of it, but it's this guy who's looking, you know, following his life's quest through the desert. And it's short and it's great. And my girlfriend told me that she had read it 100 times or 12 times or whatever, and she's underlined it and she's highlighted it and she loves it and blah blah blah. And I sometimes will take a pen or a highlighter to books and mark things that I like. I've done that obviously with Hunter a lot. And I feel like sometimes when I sit down to read a specific book, I know going in whether or not I'm going to like sort of dog ear pages or underline stuff. And she had said that and I should have listened to her, but I was just like, hey, I'm just going to read it. And then I was 10 pages in and I got a pen and I was like, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of nice nuggets in here that are worth saving and coming back to. So I highly recommend The Alchemist. It's short. It's fun. It's moving. It's great. I really loved it. And shout out to Ballsy for recommending it over and over and over until I finally listened to her and read it. And I just finished Acid for the Children, which is part one, I guess. I didn't realize until I was done that there, I guess, is a part two or more coming. But it is part one of Flea's memoirs, the bassist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, amongst other bands, but obviously most famously for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It is a mostly chronological memoir of just him growing up, and it's awesome. I love it. I've read a million rock star memoirs, famous folk memoirs, and this is right up there with my favorite. I'm a Chili Peppers fan. I love the Chili Peppers. I read Scar Tissue, which was Anthony Kiedis's autobiography. And I guess this is also autobiography. Yeah, it's more of an autobiography than a memoir. I read Kiedis's and I liked it, but it was okay. I'm almost certain that if I recall, there was a co-writer on it. According to, you know, the cover and the pages of Acid for the Children, this is by Flea and Flea alone. And I think that's what makes it great. Some chapters are long and just straightforward stories about things. Some chapters are short and just quick recollections, thoughts, emotions from a certain time. I don't know if he kept a diary, but if not, he sure has a goddamn good memory of the last, 50 plus years of his life. And considering all the drugs that he has done and which he covers in this book, his memory is quite good if it's all true. But I love that the pace of it changes from chapter to chapter. Some things are, I think I remember there being just like a 2-page thing about like the time he almost got molested by a guy and then like just moves on from there, and then a longer chapter about when he was shooting cocaine. And a lot of the forming of his early bands in Los Angeles, growing up in Los Angeles. He was born in Australia, spent a little time in Rye, New York, which is pretty close to where I'm from in Westchester, 914 Life. And but then, of course, mostly in L.A., where he forms his first band, learns to play bass. He doesn't even form his first band. He just gets brought into a band and they just ask him to play bass and he learns the bass. He was a trumpet player. Blah, 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 blah. It's awesome. It's well written. It's funny. It moves fast. It's long as shit. It's like 500 and something pages. Moves fast. And I am didn't know, but I am super excited that there is more of it to come because as far as Rockstar autobiographies go, I think this is my favorite ever. Speaking of music, I've got four music suggestions, recommendations, things that I have been listening to a lot. Not necessarily new things, but just things that I've been listening to a lot for one reason or another since I have been hurt. And then we are going to wrap this up, and hopefully all this stuff is, you don't have to check out all of it. You don't have to reply and tell me you liked it or you didn't like it. Just, I'm just giving you things. I'm just sitting here in a hotel room in Hoover, Alabama, telling you the shit that I have watched and listened to since I've been injured and that you can watch or listen to or read while you're in self-imposed quarantine or until the government locks us all in our things. The Bends, Radiohead's The Bends, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago, depending on when I actually end up dropping this, that The Bends, Radiohead's The Bends, celebrated its 25th anniversary. If you are a Radiohead fan, go back and listen to The Bends start to finish a couple times. If you're not a Radiohead fan, 100% stop this podcast right now and come back to it later after you listen to The Bends start to finish. The Bends is so fucking good. A lot of people sort of found out about Radiohead at a variety of different times along their journey, to steal a phrase from Pilot Pete. OK Computer, I think, put them on the map the biggest when it came out. That was probably their biggest sort of pop. The Bends was obviously really big before that, came out 2 years before that in 1995. But they went on a mighty run from The Bends to OK Computer to Kid A to Amnesiac. Hail to the Thief isn't my favorite Radiohead album. I feel like that was a little bit of a letdown, pun intended, for me. And then In Rainbows, those six albums in a row, pretty fucking solid six album run, even with Hail to the Thief not being my personal fave. But it all starts, the real run all starts with The Bends. And it's sort of where Radiohead starts to get kind of wild with the effects and the way that they mess with their instruments, but it also does have like just a real alt, like mid-90s, late-90s alt rock feel to it, sort of Brit rock. But if you listen to it, they do start fucking with their instruments a little bit. And as I just put on Twitter the other day, my favorite thing is when you watch Radiohead play songs from The Bends live, watching how they have, like, watching how Johnny will fuck with the instruments, like, in an analog fashion to do some of the effects that they did on that are so fun. But if you're a Radiohead fan or if you're not, I don't care. Go back and appreciate for the first time or reappreciate how goddamn amazing The Bends is. Start to finish. 25th anniversary. I can't believe how fucking old I am. And as I said on Twitter, The Bends is easily the most played album on The Joe Show, my college radio show, on 91.3 WLVR, Lehigh Valley Radio in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, from 1997 to 2001. I don't think any album was played more than The Bends. So if you want just a little taste, and you know what? I should try to find some of the tapes and convert one or two to digital and put them up on the JPP, on the JPP feed from the old Joe Show. Oh God, it would be so embarrassing to listen to now, and I probably couldn't even get away with like playing the music on a podcast or whatever. But I'm sure I'd be so embarrassed at the kind of jokes I was doing between songs and stuff like that. But if you want a taste of how the Joe Show on 91.3 WLVR felt, listen to The Bends. The Wood Brothers. I just went and saw them in concert at the Regent in downtown LA. And because I was going to see them in concert, I started listening to their stuff more and more. They just had a new album come out. They are folksy, bluesy, bluegrassy band that I was surprised. I felt like when I discovered them that I was had to have been late to the party. But I've been posting about them lately and telling people about them lately and telling people that they're on tour. And I'm surprised how many of my big music fan friends don't know about the Wood Brothers. I just think they are so goddamn good. That was the second time that I've seen them live after discovering them a few years ago. And thank God that that happened before the coronavirus shit hit the fan. Because I would have been so sad to miss the show. They were so great. I hobbled my way downtown on my crutches. I got up into the balcony area via a pretty boss ass lift at the Regent Theater, and they kill it live. If you need a couple of songs, I mean, my advice is just go to like the Wood Brothers on Apple Music or on Spotify and listen to like the first five or six tracks if you just like stream the artist. Postcards from Hell is my personal favorite. I think it's one of the greatest songs I've ever heard about a blues song about blues, and it's so good. I love it. And listen to Postcards from Hell, and that's one. Give me some feedback what you think about that song, because I think it's so goddamn good. The Muse, Loaded, and then their new album. Just listen to all the Wood Brothers and let me know what you think, because I just think they're so goddamn good. And I'm like desperately hoping that the corona situation ends soon, because I want to go find a place to see them again. They're not coming back to LA soon, but I love them live so much. I love their albums so much. I've been listening to, just the Apple Music artists page for the Wood Brothers, probably for a couple minutes every day for the better part of, 2.5 months now since I got hurt. Another one that, like, I'm certainly not breaking the news to anybody about, but sometimes I forget about an artist for a while, and then something brings me back to them, and then I go like through this like reappreciation, and I just did that the other day with the Bends. Not that I ever forget about Radiohead, or not that the Bends isn't always in my playlist, but Warren Zevon is somebody that for some reason I'll just go through these like binges on, and then like I don't know if I play it out or wear them out, but then like for some reason, and maybe it's just like the kind of guy Warren Zevon was, he'll just kind of disappear off my radar for a while, almost like he goes into hibernation. Warren Zevon, if you don't know, another like folky rocker, passed away, God, probably over 10 years ago now, from cancer. LA, like just kick ass, like tons of songs about LA. Desperados Under the Eaves was a song that just came up on my shuffle recently, and it just started me back on a huge Warren Zevon kick. And like I was like, how did I forget to listen to Warren Zevon every day? Why did I do that? What was going on in my life? What kind of bullshit has gotten me sidetracked from having, two Warren Zevon tracks in my life every day minimum? So if you don't know Warren Zevon, and I don't know who you are if you don't, go find him. And if you're like me and you do know and love and appreciate Warren Zevon, but for some reason maybe he does the same thing to you. Maybe he slips out of your consciousness and hides for a little while. Well, this is me doing what Shuffle did for me, and telling you, go listen to him again. And then the last thing, this is sort of a crossover, but anybody who knows the song Apache, which is been recorded a million times over, but most famously by the Incredible Bongo Band. Apache is the hook for like the break beats from Apache are used for numerous hip hop songs and other tracks from the Incredible Bongo Band you have been sampled through, like, they're like the most sampled band in hip hop. There is a documentary that I discovered on Netflix called Sample This that's all about the Incredible Bongo Band, all about the making of their two albums. They're like a, they're just like a like kind of a super group of percussionists that got put together in like the weirdest way. And so the Netflix documentary called Sample This, the documentary is not great, but it's short and it's fun and it's full of information about the Incredible Bongo Band and how they came together. Like, and when I say it's not great, it's just like, I don't think the filmmaking quality of it is great. I think the documentary could have been done a lot better, but there also is not a lot, ton of information to work with, and a ton of people left to interview. But I highly recommend watching Sample This, which is a documentary about the Incredible Bongo Band, and then listening to, there's if you search for them like on any of the streaming platforms, there, the thing that comes up is 40 years of the Incredible Bongo Band. It's like, again, like a compilation of their kind of like greatest hits or like different versions of the tracks that you know. But if you're into hip hop, you have to watch this movie and you have to listen to it, because just for all the samples, like, it's like you're listening to these songs, but you're also listening to like 100 other songs that you know, because every time you hear a beat or a sample from something that you know and love in hip hop, you're like, oh my God, that, oh my God, that's them too. Holy shit. And I don't remember how I discovered the documentary, but it's great. It just, the documentary is fun and full of information. Watch it, then go to the Incredible Bongo Band, and then just like have just like a way better handle on hip hop history and where a lot of the songs come from. Okay, it is 4:57 p.m. here in Hoover, Alabama. I have a 6:30 show here on Sunday night, so I am going to jump in the shower and get out of here and get over to the Stardome in Hoover, Alabama. If you're listening to this, there is potential. I don't know how I feel about promoting people to come out, but there is potential that I will be at Fantasy Springs Resort and Casino in Palm Springs next weekend doing two shows on Friday and Saturday, opening for Alan Havey. Come, I guess, if things are better. If they're not, don't. Stay home. If things aren't better, stay home. Listen to, watch, read some of the things that I mentioned, and tell me what you think of all of them. That's it. I just wanted to give you my quarantine / knee injury playlist, and I just wanted to give I just wanted to restart the Joe Prano podcast. It starts with one. You got to get one out there. I feel really weird about it being a solo one. I don't like solo podcasts. I feel like I have a little bit of mental illness that I was just able to sit here for 62 minutes and talk. But I did it. And we've got the Joe Prano podcast restarted. You've got a bunch of shit you can listen to after you listen to this, now that it's over. And can't wait to hear what you guys think. Message me on Twitter, @FixYourLife. Message me on Instagram, @JoePrano. And go to my website, joeprano.com, if you want to come see a show when everything settles down. Or rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast if you enjoy it. The best way for me to know if you enjoy this is to do all those things. Is there going to be more of these? I hope so. I'm planning on it. I've got some things lined up. I've got some interviews in the works. I've got some content that I want to give you guys. But do you want it? Let me know. Twitter, Instagram, iTunes, Apple Podcasts review of this podcast, and every other place that you can contact me. And that's it for now. Enjoy all those things that I just gave you. And of course, enjoy this beautiful outro by Mr. Doug Ray.
Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. See, I had a long ride, turned the volume up high, and the time flew by so quick. I laughed out loud, that's what it's about. I really don't feel safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, 'cause he drinks till he hits the flow. Hey Joe, it's it's time to stop the show. Pack it up and away we go.